to the Cozy Impact Pod.
Hey everyone, this is Julia. Jumping in before you hear our first ever episode recorded on Zoom through LinkedIn Audio. We have edited this episode to remove the guest speaker, Najla Dales, who jumped in during our conversation on LinkedIn Audio, because unfortunately, Zoom did not pick up what Najla shared. This is really just due to us figuring out the tech in our first go, but we'll include the link to find out more about Najla Dales and her work with Our Open House. You'll hear that the audio cuts a couple places just to remove the silence that you would otherwise have heard Najla sharing wonderful insights and reflections and recommendations with our listeners. And unfortunately, Najla was silenced in the recording. And so we don't have her voice on here, but we love Najla and give this a listen. Hopefully everything still makes sense and we'll be figuring out more about how best to use this tech and record these sessions for you. But keep an eye out on LinkedIn for our next live session coming up. We're doing these weekly at the moment. So far we have hosted two at the time of me recording this, but we're planning to keep going. So thanks so much for listening in, and do reach out on LinkedIn, or you can email me directly at hello@juliafirestone.com. If there are other topics that you'd like to hear Malia and I discuss, particularly around social impact, conscious leadership, social justice and activism, and the complexities of our well-being and mental health and all the other related topics. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the episode.
Hey friends, sorry we are a little late getting started. We've got a few folks on the line. Thanks for your patience. This is both of our first time using LinkedIn Audio. So hopefully in future we won't be running behind again. But we're also recording in Zoom, so we might be able to share this out later. And I am super excited to also have my dear friend Malia Wright Mirror here. Hi, Malia.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. I'm just so excited that we're doing this.
Me too. Me too. And you know, the official intro here is that in this series, we're going to be sharing conversations on our favorite topics that tickle our hearts and brains. It was really supposed to be heart tickles, but I wrote brain tickles. So it's brain tickles in the invite, but it's really heart and brain tickles. Malia, do you want to say a little bit about why we're doing this?
Yes. Yeah, so Julia, you and I, we met in New York. And I think it was actually around just pre-COVID time that we started seeing each other in person and then starting to see each other virtually when you moved back to New York. I live in Los Angeles. And we started having these conversations after a class we would take together virtually, or, you know, something that we would show up together. We would go to an event and then we would hop on the phone and then talk for 2 hours and just dive deeply into topics that we were exploring or learning or what was coming up for us. And a little bit about me, for those of you who are just meeting me for the first time or hearing me for the first time, is I'm a diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility integration and embodiment specialist. So I always kind of say that the part that I really focus on is, once you're learning the education, how is the body digesting? How are we processing? I come from a background in Vedic medicine and Vedic teachings, and also trauma healing and somatics. And so a lot of the parts that really interest me are, how is the body digesting? What are we learning? How are we collectively moving through things together? And this also shows up through burnout culture and scarcity and money and stress and limitations that we feel, or individualism too. So these are things that I really love geeking out about. And Julia, I know, has another perspective, but similarly very in tune with a lot of those things. Julia, tell me about you.
So about me, I'm a transformational social impact and leadership coach and also strategist. So I work with organizations that are values aligned, focused on social impact. I also work with clients who are mostly mid-career and mid-senior level, who are focused on social impact and making, you know, I say the do-gooders and the troublemakers, because I like a little bit of rebelliousness, but also honoring many of our wishes to be kind of like the good kid, goody goodies, doing good in the world. But I work with private clients. I do group coaching. Most recently, a few months ago, led my first retreat in the south of France. And you joined, Malia, leading beautiful somatics and movement practices. I think I referred to you as a yoga teacher, but it was so much more than that.
Just a little bit of yoga.
Yeah, but it was so much fun collaborating, which I think we've been wanting to do for a while. Also, you didn't say this specifically, but we met because you were doing a yoga piano exchange with my roommate, Sarah Lewis.
Yes.
So you were learning some piano, but then you were so generous also leading these like beautiful private yoga classes for our little household.
It was the perfect exchange.
It was so good. Is our audio okay? Everyone's still here?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. And I'll also say I have worked in nonprofits. I've worked in corporate social impact. I've worked in social enterprises. So I'm sure a lot from across each of our experiences will come up today. But really recently we had this, we never have short conversations. So we'll see how today goes. Jump in and out as you need, friends who are listening. But we had such a great conversation about money. I mean, it came up during the retreat in France, and I know you were getting really curious about it. And, you know, we talked about like conscious capitalism. We've talked about labor exploitation and money in the social impact space, like scarcity, so many topics. But I know, Malia, you specifically have been in this really unique and amazing program around money. So I thought maybe you could kick it off by telling us a little bit about that program.
So the program is called Trauma of Money, and I'm actually finishing tomorrow, a 4-month study. Yeah. And I'm so excited because I will also be able to facilitate and offer these trainings, not necessarily the quote unquote trauma of money trademarked brand, but kind of offsets of what I'm seeing, what I'm noticing. And I think you're so spot on in a lot of the spark, of course, is years of being in money-making professions. But when we were on this retreat in France, there was a huge conversation about how are we feeling supported? How are we feeling recognized? How are we feeling like we are making the money that feels really aligned? And also, how are we taking care of our communities in the process? So some of my curiosities that I've had are around, if I'm going to be in the system that we live in right now, which I don't think is going anywhere in this current moment, how do we start to shake up the ground or loosen the roots to create more space or more growth to something that is new? And I have a lot of curiosity of how that works. So this course is really focusing on personal trauma, relational trauma, systemic trauma, that has to do with relationship to money. So this is not only the things that we learned from our parents growing up, or experiences that we've had as children or adults, but it's also what is the systemic makeup of how we are in relationship to money. And something that I notice a lot is this scarcity, this individualistic view, this I have to protect, I have to figure out these things on my own, and it's me on my own on a little island, and let me do whatever I can to survive. And it creates this feeling of never having enough. There's this really incredible book called Soul of Money. Have you heard of it, Julia?
I've heard of it because you've talked about it.
I've talked about it.
I haven't read it yet. Tell me, what do you love about it?
Soul of Money, I'll write in the comments the author, Lynn, yeah, it's gone. It will come back. but Lynn actually works in a lot of nonprofit spaces. She wrote a book that was kind of based from this perspective of working in philanthropy and then noticing what was happening around that scarcity mindset. And in The Soul of Money, there's this part of it where she talks about money as being water and money in this fluid flow and exchange. And she was saying how in the 70s, there are also interesting aspects of this book that I think are challenging, but as an overall book, in the 70s, she was saying her husband got in some really great investments or in a really great career and was making tons of money coming through. And she was saying that they started from this simple little house, and then they got a bigger house because they started making more money. And then they started getting into wine because they liked wine and they could get into wine. And then they started studying sommelier classes because they had the money and they were like, oh, well, let's do this because we can do this. And then they had to build a wine fridge. And then they had to, you know, they were started having interest in art, and then they had more interest in different artists, and then they got really into art, so they started art collecting, and then they started working with a curator, and then they started and it keeps going. And she was saying how she always felt like she never had enough, even though she says in the book that I had all of these things. No matter how much money I had, I still felt like I didn't have enough.
Interesting. Does she say why she felt that or her thoughts on that?
Well, if we're kind of talking about this more kind of separate individual, you know, survival of the fittest, like I need to succeed individualism in especially Northern American and Western cultures. Northern America, there's this feeling of, oh, okay, if I have more money, this is where I can put it. I can put it towards the wine fridge. I can put it towards the art. I can put it towards the cars. I can create a more cushy luxury lifestyle for myself. And so the more that you're elevating your needs, the less money that you do have. You know, I don't know if you've heard this term before. What is it called? It's like the inflation of luxury or something like that. I don't even know if that's the exact term, but it's something like that, that the more money we make, the more we spend, the more expensive lifestyle that we gain. And so there is this feeling of, oh, okay, well, if I'm leading up, if I'm raising this money or if I'm earning more, then I have to keep up with the other people that are earning more. And then we're, you know, it's like this endless cycle. And I'm not saying that that's the exact case for every single person, but I think there is a feeling around always wanting something more, which if we date back to the very beginning of consumerism, there's this great documentary called Century of Self. And it is kind of the beginning of how consumerism started. So it's interesting having this conversation because we live in consumerism, we live in capitalism. And I don't think it's safe to say that we can just reject everything that is, because we would be living on an island with no phone service.
Right. I'm reminded as you say that of some friends who were, I mean, true, I think Trotskyite is the correct term, like Trotskyite communists living in New York City where I live. And I remember like seeing them at Washington Square Park, and they were, you know, they were with a whole group of people and talking about why communism is cool. And one of them left and came back having bought a bunch of packs of Marlboro cigarettes. And I was like, how can you call yourself a communist when you're like smoking these, you know, you're supporting big tobacco? And yeah. And the response was kind of like, these are the things we believe in, but it's actually not possible to exist outside of a capitalist society when you live within one. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it, that was a long time ago. It just didn't really make sense to me. But I think even if you're not a communist, I think these are interesting questions, or at least maybe like a realist acknowledgement that even if you are someone who is very collectively oriented and community oriented, or, you know, an activist in different ways, that as we exist in a capitalist society, you know, like, I think there's a big question of, is it possible to do social impact work and make money or have the resources you need to thrive without compromising your values?
So this is a perfect segue, because so I'm talking about one version, right? Like the affluence, the luxury, inflation. And this is one aspect of it. And then you have the other side where everyone else is just trying to survive, to have to pay their bills and to have their needs met. I also want to name that these things, it's not saying these things are good or bad.
Right.
And that's so, so important, that having nice things that make you feel really good is not a bad thing. And also having food on your table and a roof over your head and a little bit of extra money to maybe go out to dinner or go on a vacation, that's not bad. These things are not good or bad or right or wrong. Or if I work in social impact, then I cannot have things or feel nourished and supported. But there is this big question here about the scarcity that does occur when we do have money in our possession. And when do we feel secure, satisfied, supported? And also, when there is excess money coming through, how do we share that to create a cyclical exchange of support for everyone? My husband and I were just talking about this. We've been talking about getting a mountain home for a very long time. We don't own.
I don't
we
know.
Don't have anything.
No.
We rent in Los Angeles, but we're kind of at this place where we're thinking, you know what? We might never own in Los Angeles. Maybe in 15 years. I have no idea what that will be, but at least in the near future, we will not own. And so we've talked about getting a mountain home just outside of Los Angeles, just a place that we could maybe rent out or have available, so we could have access to just going out whenever. We were having this conversation as we were driving back from a road trip this weekend. And I was like, you know, if we do this, I really want to make sure there is some part of this that we are giving back to our community, or giving back to the community in Big Bear, which is kind of where we want to get a house. Mm-hmm. What is needed in this community? What happens when people buy vacation homes to the community? What support is needed? Also, something that's really important to me, a value I have, is if I'm in a field where I want to be making, you know, great income, I also want to make sure that there's space to not gatekeep resources.
Yeah.
So how can we create some sort of, you know, scholarship program or something so people can have access to this rental if they want to in some capacity? So how are we not gatekeeping resources to only be for the elite or affluent? These are just thoughts that were happening this weekend.
That's big. I mean, I can't tell you how many conversations I've had about renting in New York City and, you know, just especially among millennials like us, how many people have just acknowledged like buying is never going to happen in New York or LA or, you know, San Francisco or other big cities like that. And I think the question of how you can contribute to the community as well, like if you have the resourcing to afford the house, the vacation house, then what does it mean to also support community building? What I'm also reminded, because you talked about resourcing and, you know, you're a business owner, right? Mm-hmm. You've been doing the entrepreneurial thing for a while. Are you down to go there and talk about
being
entrepreneurs and money stuff around that?
Yeah. I want to hear about your money stuff.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I have so much money stuff and I've been working through it. It's an ongoing process, but you know, in the last year I've talked a lot about salary transparency, and have gotten into a practice of like, anytime someone posts a job on LinkedIn, including if it's like the CEO or executive director of like a huge organization that has lots of prestige, I'm going to be in the comments saying, wow, this sounds like a great role. Sorry if I missed it, but where is the salary? Can you tell us about the salary? Or I'd love to share this with my network, but it's unclear what the salary is, you know, and just like pushing for that, because I think it's, and this is anecdotal, but my perception is that, in some ways, the social sector, especially NGOs, global NGOs, are particularly dragging their feet when it comes to transparency. All that being said, as a segue, I'm trying to practice what I preach and be transparent about money stuff as an entrepreneur. So I will say off the bat, like my first year getting into business, which I'm just coming up on my 3 years in business anniversary in July. Woo! Yeah, year one. So I will say I was planning to leave the corporate where I was working in corporate innovation and strategy after the social impact campaign I had worked on had finished up. So I was planning to leave and start my own business, and then found out our whole team was getting laid off in the first few months of the pandemic. And for me, that worked really well. So year one of running a business, I had a payout from the corporate where I worked. I had a pretty comfortable corporate bank account balance. Like, for me, it was around 30K, which was, I'm just trying to put all the numbers out there. So I was going into running my business feeling like pretty stable. I was getting unemployment as I was like thinking through the strategy of how I would build my business. But my office had been in New Jersey, which has very generous unemployment, plus pandemic numbers were extra, you know, on top of that. So it was $900 a week. And I had a business coach who gave, like, this was really good advice, because I was like, I don't know if I should take unemployment. I've had this corporate job and I'm starting a business. And she was like, you've been paying into it. You just got laid off. Take the unemployment.
Such a good point.
Yeah. So I did. And then I looked back a year after starting my business, and I made around 13K running my business, which isn't a lot. And I don't have a significant other who's like in finance or something. So he also got laid off at the start of the pandemic and went freelance. So, you know, we've both been working really hard to make it work. But I just looked at the last 12 months of my revenue. So it's kind of like second half of year two, or I guess really it's year three of running my business altogether. And I made a little over 40K. So yeah, which is eats out my nonprofit salary when I was starting in my career, which was 30K with no healthcare benefits.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I also just want to say, you know, especially from starting from nothing or starting from support, of course, your unemployment and also your severance package, but starting from basically not having any income coming in to having that grow in the last 3 years. It's very, I just want to applaud you because it's hard. It's definitely hard being freelance and entrepreneur, creating opportunities for yourself. And I do believe that this is going to even grow so much more and expand so much more, but just having that where you can have at least the baseline of income to support your needs. Mostly
it's still paying rent maybe, in New York City,
maybe if you're living in not New York or LA,
but
having that, it's just really, really exciting.
Thanks, Malia. And I if you're comfortable also sharing insights about your journey with that would be awesome. But I just want to say too, like, I think the reason why money transparency matters, you know, it matters in terms of job postings, because it's just absurd to me that you would, like, as a company, you would ask for labor, but not acknowledge what value you attribute to that labor. That's just so strange to me. Like, you wouldn't buy a house without knowing its value. You wouldn't buy a freaking sandwich without knowing what the sandwich costs. So it's or most people, I mean, I guess there are people out there who would, but I wouldn't, but it's so wild to me that there's still organizations that are hung up on that and don't see how weird it is to not have salary transparency. But then in terms of entrepreneurship, and also I think in the nonprofit space, this kind of goes back to like basic labor organizing. Like, I'm not a labor organizer, but it's important work. But I think there's such power of transparency where, you know, if you know that I made 13K in year one of my business, then if you were feeling shame or stigma about making around that or even making more than that, it's like, no, actually that's a really reasonable revenue in year one, and going in clear-eyed, unless, you know, you're like starting with a trust fund or, you know, something that's making it a lot easier to do that, or starting with an investment, for example. You know, I think just the more we can speak openly about these things, the more we destigmatize and remove shame. And also the more like we're not gaslighting people who are struggling through this or going and thinking like, okay, I have, you know, $500 in my bank account. I've been told anyone can do it. I want to be an entrepreneur too. And like, the reality is there's so much more resourcing behind a lot of entrepreneurs that doesn't get acknowledged.
I also love what you said about transparency and how when we start to peel back the curtain, there's so much more clarity. And then we can also feel so much more recognized in where we are, especially as an entrepreneur, what we are doing, how we are exploring, moving forward and having a successful business. If I could give you the number one thing that came out of this trauma money course that I do want to facilitate with is, I remember having a pretty stressful money moment a couple weeks ago, and I didn't get charged around it. I know. Julia's giving me this face right now.
You're so, we're ready. We're ready for being on audio, Malia, because that was very good naming what was happening. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wide-eyed, ready for our podcast.
Wide-eyed. I didn't feel charged around it. And this is the reason why. Because the more that we talk about this, the more that we find transparency, the more we start to dive deep into those areas of ourselves that don't want to touch money or are hoarding. In internal family systems, if you're familiar on the psychology perspective, it talks about different parts of ourselves. So we might have a manager part, which is more, okay, let me hold on to everything. That's me. Let me hold on to everything. Let me find security. Let me grasp onto things and make sure it's safe and know where every dollar is going so I know exactly where everything is. And there's also a firefighter part that's like, I don't want to look at it. I just want to blow it with my hose and just hope for the best. And that kind of turns into this avoidance, or I don't want to look at my bank account, or I don't want to look at what's actually happening. And you talked a lot about transparency and salary, but also just transparency in our relationship to money. So what starts to happen when we befriend these parts that don't feel so good? What starts to happen when we find a lot more clarity, when we learn what happens to scarcity in the mind? Psychologically, the prefrontal cortex starts to shut down when there is this scarcity mindset or scarcity belief in the body. So think about a decision that you have been trying to make, but you're feeling really scarce around it. This might also show up in how we advocate for ourselves, how we ask for more money, how we create more advocacy in our home lives too, and our work home balance.
Mm-hmm.
And there can also be this fear of, okay, if I don't have enough, if I'm not accepted, if I say the wrong thing, then maybe I will be ostracized or, you know, exiled from the business. but there is this belief that I think many people have, especially in the United States, of I don't want to rock the boat because kind of, okay, I'm going to hold on to this for dear life because I do not know what's going to happen. And that transparency of where your value is, where you see yourself, noticing what you're really, really good at, and how we can all start to work together. Because one of my favorite things to think about is when we all start to work together, then this creates more opportunities, more possibilities, more space for everyone, more money for everyone involved. It's like just this exchange that starts to build and build and build. So I just was thinking about that off of your transparency and salary comment.
Oof, you just brought up so many amazing things. Like one of our current listeners right now is about to get a shout out. But before that, I will say I do a lot of work with parts work or internal family systems, and I love it so much. So I think, you know, if people are interested in hearing us talk more about that, let us know on the event page. Because I feel like we could, you know, do a whole conversation around parts and like which parts come up. We could even do a live, this is big, a live part session. But I think it's, you know, for me, it's separating the kind of capital S self from all of these other voices, some of which, you know, we have built ourselves, some of which are kind of the echoes of other voices we've heard. They might be the echoes of capitalism, the echoes of white supremacy that get lodged into our brains and tell us, you know, we're not good enough, or we're going to mess up, or if we fail, everyone will judge us, all of these different things. And I just want to name like some coaches kind of work with that and say like, these are your gremlins or like the bad guys. And I love that in internal family systems and parts work, it's like, these are your protectors. So not that white supremacy, well, white supremacy is protecting a lot, as is capitalism, not the things we want to be protecting, but those voices in our heads are there. You know, we can think of it as having a positive purpose. And so when it comes to money stuff, which is huge, obviously, I worked with one client who we did parts work together, and she identified this like money voice that was, has become an ally now to her, like still years on, where, you know, if she's going to make a big financial decision or go into a negotiation or advocate for her worth, she like has a little meeting with money voice beforehand, and they like talk about it as partners, which I love this, which is such a cool flip. Like when you do parts work or internal family systems well, and invite money into, you know, into that process, like I think such cool stuff can come out of it.
A really fun practice to do is to write a letter to money as if it were a person. And, you know, set a timer for 15 minutes and write, you know, dear money, where are you at? Where have you been? Or whatever comes up, just set a timer, play some music, and see what starts to emerge from this conversation of writing to money as if it were a person. And it is a relationship. But something that I find so interesting is that I think a lot of times in more of this very linear structure around money, we want to separate money from emotions. Mm. And I say we as like maybe more capitalistic structures. We want to separate money from emotions. This is separate. This is its own thing. But name one person who does not have emotional ties to money. So this relationship, this personal journey with money, that's something that can definitely be explored. It's also just so important to have that communication with neighbors and connection to people who live around you. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's a great idea. I want to do this.
Yeah, I love it so much, Najla. And I think it's like such a great example of kind of disrupting the norms of capitalism in real time, right? Like, I think we can think of capitalism as this big, like, overwhelming structure that we're not, you know, we have no power over. But something like that is, it's just like disrupts the individualism that allows capitalism to thrive, right? Like it enables community and like people to see each other as whole humans, and like removes shame and stigma from that experience. And I also just want to give a shout, because Najla's, your wealth, it was how to increase your wealth pillars was your workshop, right? It was so good. And you're such an amazing workshop leader and facilitator and community builder, and just like one of my favorite people. So I'm so glad you're here.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for Najla for sharing that. I actually really want to share, because this is what this space is for, but I want to share a real time feeling or reaction that's coming up in my body right now, because this is the work. So I love this idea, Najla. I don't have the neighborhood that I moved to. I live in Pasadena now. I used to live in Highland Park or Lincoln Heights. And I actually really loved my neighborhood in Lincoln Heights. My neighbor would bring me lemons from her tree. She'd been living there for 70 years. And, you know, we would exchange things. She would care for my dog when my dog was sick, and she would just come over and say, oh, is your dog okay? And I really loved that neighborhood. And I was also close with all of our other neighbors in our little apartment area. But now that I live in Pasadena, I've noticed there isn't as much of a community, you know, hello, hi, let me get to know you. I've been really trying, but I could definitely try more. But as you were sharing this, there was this feeling that first was, oh my goodness, this sounds awesome. I want to create or have something available like this in my community. And then there was this pit of this little voice in the pit of my stomach that said, what if people take too much? I know.
Is this parts work now?
Probably. Yeah. And I was like, shh, Malia, push that aside. We're here talking about, you know, community growth, mutual aid. And there's a voice deep down in the back of my belly that is saying, what if people take too much? What if I offer something and somebody takes too much? And I was sitting here as you were both talking about these wealth pillars and thinking, oh, you know what? I don't know if I want to share this. And I said to myself, no, this is the exact thing to share. Is this belief inside my belly is saying, I do not have enough. So how can I offer anything? And this is like where the trauma of money comes in, or money trauma comes in, or resource trauma comes in, is that even though like maybe 40% of the time I'm feeling amazing, so spot on, ready to give, ready to support, there's this other part of me that's saying protect, protect, protect. And then here, if we're working through this real time, I can start to recognize what are the sensations in my body, like a tightening in my belly. I can start to resource and notice my environment, that I'm in a room with four walls. I can start to investigate what's happening here. Where is this story coming from? This story is probably coming from me needing to survive, or also being an entrepreneur and trying to get my bills paid and my needs met. Mm-hmm. And then I'm noticing that scarcity start to come up, right? And I can start to meet this scarcity and say, okay, what is this resource, or what is this route to this story that's being told? And if I could share it, you know, a lot of capitalism, a lot of scarcity mindset in our culture. And then I can start to create some inventory, which is, I do have a lot of rice and oats right now. I have tons of flour, tons. I bought too many. I didn't think I had flour, and I bought an extra bag. Now I have two almost full bags of flour. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have some dried shiitake mushrooms, and I can start to actually to investigate and create inventory of what's actually happening here. And then I can go into the portion of recreate. So what does it feel like to give or offer and receive from one another? Mm-hmm. And I can already tell my, and then recheck in, what is my nervous system experiencing? It feels a lot more spacious, feels a lot more calm. I'm actually curious, whoever's listening here too, if any of you have noticed anything different show up in your body around just this walkthrough, and then take action on it.
Being a white person in this world, like, I also feel those tendencies sneaking in of like protect, like don't share vulnerability in the ways that you just did so generously, Malia. Like, you just walked through your uncomfortable experience in your body and talked it all through with us and coached yourself publicly. And in my head, I'm just like, well, I should look back at the process and talk to Najla about the process of doing this and how it functions. I'm like, woo, I'm putting up walls and barriers and like trying to get it right. I'm like, how would I get this right? And yeah, I think, I'm just acknowledging that too. And that comes up for me so much with money, of like saying the right thing, doing the right thing. And when it comes to like, I love the idea of the communal food pantry. I love the idea of sharing and resourcing others. And I think where I get very, where I struggle is being resourced and asking for that. And I think there's, I think part of that is capitalism, is like an element of like showing, performing stability and wealth in a certain way. And I think like whiteness is so tied to performing wealth in so many ways. But then also like to ask for help and to be vulnerable, to be like lacking, not in a scarcity sense of like perceived lacking, but to really name like, I'm struggling financially, or like had 50 bucks in my bank account a few months ago. Like that is scary as hell to me to put that out there. And so for me, I think it would, I'm like much more comfortable with the idea of being like, I have a can of beans I can share, but to go, if I had access to something like this or co-created this with my neighbors, to go in and actually make that text and say, hey, can I have your rice, or can I have some milk, or like whatever it is, that feels so deeply unsettling in my body. Like to ask to be resourced by others, I can like feel my throat closing off and like, yeah, my pit in my stomach. Yeah, that feels so deeply uncomfortable to me.
Wow. Oh my gosh, Julia, thank you so much for sharing that. I am positive that you are not alone in that experience. And part of me wishes that we had more space here to just go into it if you wanted to. Because yeah, like the things that you're noticing, the sensations that your body is responding to, ooh, can I be given? Can I receive? And that reciprocity of what my body is being able to receive. And also what Najla said about, you know, where is this consent? How much am I giving? How much am I over giving? To the point where we feel so depleted but don't know how to take in. There's that archetype of the martyr, right? The martyr dies in the process of giving. Mm-hmm. And I think we also see this a lot in nonprofit spaces. Mm-hmm. We see this a lot in the social justice spaces too. Mm-hmm. Is the amount of fight, which again, not good or bad, just is here, but the amount of fight without the reciprocity, that's so real. It's so real.
Thank you for the validation, and thank you for the hearts, Najla, as I was talking to. I think it's we're all working through money stuff, right? And like I think maybe coming back to the piece around transparency, like the more we can talk about these things and share publicly, you know, what's really going on as we work through these things, and also the amazing practices that you have learned and are working with Malia and integration, and also the like very real actionable community-based collective strategies and practices that you use, Najla. Like I think that's so important along the way as we navigate these questions. And you know, there's all the tech bros talk about disruption, but like this is actual disruption for good, right? It's not just like disrupting public transit by giving more people individualistic car rides with no drivers and destroying access. Okay, I'm going off on a tangent now, but it's like, you know, disrupting harmful and oppressive and violent systems by being loving and nurturing and kind to ourselves and each other and speaking openly about it.
Yep, the sweetness, the soft skills.
I feel like there's so much more we can talk about too. And I want to acknowledge the time. We can, again, Malia and I don't ever have like 10-minute conversations. This is true with you, Nicola, as well. So I think the two of you will also probably enjoy meeting separately and talking more.
Yes.
But for those of you listening, I wanted to just pause and really thank you for joining us as we're like experimenting and trying this out. I will already say on my part, I had so much fun. I feel like this felt so good. The captions LinkedIn need a little bit of work, but I'm glad that they exist because we love accessibility. But as we, are you okay to kind of move into closing out, Malia?
Yes, let's close. We have many more conversations to have.
We do. And there were so many topics we've touched on that the two of us love talking about together. Should I just like share a few of those?
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about broadly fear of change. We've talked about burnout culture. We've talked, I just touched on this, but what it means to be a disruptor in social impact fields, how to create your own personal manifesto through the insights of pirates, shame, your identity and how it's linked to jobs and values that you may or may not share with organizations. And I think I added this one in, feeling like a dumpster fire, but pretending you're okay.
Oh my gosh. Let's please talk about that one.
Oh my gosh. That I think came up after some like rejection sensitivity stuff happened recently. All that being said, Malia, there are so many things we want to talk about. So please, please, please message us, DM us privately or message in the original event invite and let us know what topics you would like us to either expand on that we touched on today or, you know, anything from that list I just shared or other ideas you have, because I think we'll do this again.
Yes, and connect with us.
Connect with us. And Malia, what do you have coming up right now and where can people find you?
Yeah, well, I'm actually currently working on a couple of disability inclusion trainings right now. We have one in August that is connected with SHRM, and it's really about businesses in how to get to know the individual, get to know the person, and start to shift through those biases and stereotypes around people with disabilities. And also I'm bringing in more consulting work and also offering some money trauma trainings that help process this through organizations and individuals and how to kind of approach a shifting awareness around these money ties and experiences and scarcity. So if you want to reach out, my email is malia@maliawright.com. Find me. I'm there. I want to work.
You're accepting money for these.
I'm accepting money.
Offerings, I assume.
Yeah.
I'm running a workshop this Friday on Zoom for $25. It's called Networking Sucks, a joyful project-based approach to relationship building.
I love that.
Malia, you're actually featured in the like promo photo from our retreat. But it's all about, especially if you're a job seeker, but also even if you're not, or if you're like starting your own business or just want to build your thought leadership. We love that term. Do we love that term? Not so much. But it's a way to kind of level the power dynamics when you're reaching out to people instead of asking a bunch of strangers if you can pick their brain, which is, I find, a very creepy and uncomfortable phrase. So that's this Friday, June 30th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern until 1 p.m. Eastern. And I also run a monthly community open house for social impact, which is donation-based. So you can join for free if you cannot afford the donation. And the next one is Wednesday, July 12th from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern, also on Zoom. It's facilitated. We do a couple rounds of three rounds of breakout rooms in pairs or trios, each with a fun, engaging question. This month we're doing Juicy July. So it's all about pleasure, which Malia, you know, is one of my favorite topics. And it's going to be really, it's going to be so fun. And one of our community members reached out and offered to do a sound meditation at the start. So we'll have a special treat for that too. That's July 12th, 12 to 1 Eastern. So you can find those at juliafirestonecoaching.com. You can email me at hello@juliafirestone.com. And anything else, Malia, as we close out?
I'm just so excited to be doing this. And I'm really looking forward to the other conversations that are going to come from this series. These conversations, I think the more we have them, the more we speak about them, the more we create this transparency theme, the more that it becomes so much more accessible for change and for looking at the way things are done in different ways. So I'm just so excited.